decades tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Science fiction in this hour, later on an episode of 2000 Plus from 1950. But first, it's X-1, featuring the Robert Sheckley story, The Native Problem. Heard on NBC on September 26th, 1957.
Countdown for blastoff. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. The Native Problem by Robert Sheckley. But first, hear this.
What can you do with a penny? Not much? Don't you believe it? Because for one penny a year, you, as an American taxpayer, are helping to support the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. The aim of the Food and Agriculture Organization is to provide increased supplies of food and other agricultural products at prices which the people can afford, and to raise the standard of living of rural people everywhere. You are part of the great and lasting work being done by this United Nations agency, and it costs you only one penny a year.
Now, X-1, and tonight's story, The Native Problem.
To begin with, my name is Edward Danton. I've always been a misfit. Oh, that's all right. I'm not sensitive about it. In fact, I've grown rather proud of it. I just don't fit in the modern 22nd century world. There was no place in all of New York City, from Norfolk to Bangor, where I felt at home. And it was the same in every other great city complex on Earth. In school, I flunked such elementary subjects as group acculturation, sibling fit, values recognition, and folkways judgment. There was only one thing to do. As practically every misfit in the past century had done, I decided to migrate to deep space and find a place where I could call my soul my own. I told my best friend Al Trevor of my plan.
Good night. You're really going, Ed?
That's right, Al. Just as far from this solar system as I can get.
But why, man?
You've played 12-handed bridge with me, Al. You know what a dope I am at mass dancing. I'm a misfit. I want to get away. And it's not like in the days when the ships used the old Michelson drive. With these new GM subspatial torque converters where we can travel in a matter of months what used to take them 30 or 40 years.
Well, I hate to see you go.
One more thing, Al. I'm going to give you my breeding certificate.
Oh, now, Ed, we couldn't let you do that.
You and Myrtle want two children, don't you?
Well, we've always wanted to have two, but you mustn't.
I won't need a breeding certificate where I'm going. As a matter of fact, I may even find it impossible to breed at all.
Well, that could be rather frustrating, old man.
Well, maybe after a while I'll find a girl pioneer. In the meantime, there's always sublimation.
True. What substitute have you selected?
Vegetable gardening. Might as well be practical, you know.
Might as well. Well, old man, good luck, and thanks for that breeding certificate.
The next day, I took off for the stars in a government ship. The spot I picked was out in what they call the New Territories. The planet I finally settled for was ideal. A calm, watery place dotted with fertile islands, blessed with a mild, uniform climate, and absolutely uninhabited. When they left me there, I took formal possession and christened the place New Tahiti, for obvious reasons. At first, it was fine. I was busy exploring, growing vegetables, and building a shelter. After that, though, time began to drag. I had to do something. what? I was marooned on this deserted planet, and it might be years before another Earthship would land here. And then, miraculously, it happened. A ship came out of the skies and headed for a landing on my own private island. It was an ancient Mickelson Drive job, battered and scored, but bearing a proud legend painted on its nose. The Hutter people, it read. When the ship landed on the beach, I ran out to meet it, forgetting that I must have looked more like a naked savage than a fellow Earthman. Hey, there in the ship!
Stop where you are!
Welcome to New Tahiti. Boy, am I glad to see you folks. What's the latest news from...
Stand back there! Take another step and I'll shoot.
What, is something wrong?
What's your name?
Edward Danton. What's yours?
Simeon Smith, military commander of the Hutter people. And this is Jedekiah Franker, my second in command.
How come you speak English, boy?
Me? Why, I've always spoken English.
Where are the others? Where are they hiding?
There aren't any others. Just me.
I see.
Father, can't we come out now?
No, get back in the ship, Anita.
Then I'll watch from here.
Say, she's pretty. Your daughter?
Huh.
What do you think, Simeon?
It's what I expected. Ingratiating, fawning, undoubtedly treacherous.
Yeah.
His people won't show themselves, you notice?
Uh-huh.
Probably waiting in ambush. I think an object lesson is in order.
Right. Put the fear of civilization into them.
Hey, don't point that gun at me.
Father, no. He hasn't done anything yet.
This way the others will know we mean business.
It isn't right.
Let him have it, Jedekiah.
No, wait! Hey!
He's running for the woods. Shoot him, Jedekiah.
Okay.
Shoot him. We've got to teach these savages who's boss.
Listening to The Native Problem, tonight's attraction on X-1. Friends, for as many years as any of us can remember, the sadness that polio has brought to so many homes has been almost unparalleled. But a greater sadness than this lies ahead for any who may from now on catch polio, because it may be due to carelessness. Vaccination against polio, the well-known sock shots, is more than 75% effective. And it's due to such vaccination that there was a drop of 47% in polio cases last year. But this year, vaccination has been lagging. There are 108 million persons under 40, and of these, only 45 million have had as much as one shot of the vaccine. And please remember that while the first and second shots are helpful, the third shot is necessary for maximum protection. Now, there's plenty of vaccine, and the doctors are anxious to cooperate. Remember, the end of polio is at hand, but it takes three visits to the doctor to lick it. Can you afford not to go? Now, back to X-1 and the Native Problem.
I was just plain lucky to get back to the friendly cover of the forest without stopping a bullet. It was obvious these people were too jumpy just then to listen to reason and believe me when I told them that I was not a native, that I was all alone here. I decided to wait a while. About dusk, I crept through the woods to get as near their ship as I could without being seen. They had come out of their ship. There were several dozen men and women and a few children. They were grouped around a campfire eating. On the edges of the group were several armed men looking toward the woods with apprehension. I watched while their leader, Simeon, stepped into the circle of firelight to address them. I could hear everything he said plainly.
Friends, we have come at last to our long-awaited home, our promised land. Behold, a land of milk and honey, a place of bounty and abundance. Was it not worth the long voyage, the constant peril, the endless search?
Yes, brother.
However, there is an aboriginal people here, naked and savage, undoubtedly cunning, ruthless and amoral, as aboriginals always are. Of these we must beware. We will live in peace with them if they will let us. No one can tell what goes on in a savage heart. Their standards are not ours. Their morals are not ours. We cannot trust them. We must be forever on guard. And if in doubt, We must shoot first. Remember, land too.
This was not going to be easy. I decided not to try another approach that night. The next morning, as they were bustling about unloading their spaceship, I walked down to the beach and headed straight for them with my hands held out to show them that they were empty. The sentry stopped me at the point of a gun, and in a minute, both Simeon and Jedekiah came running up, covering me with their weapons. I stood still, my flesh creeping in anticipation of the bullets someone might fire at me any minute.
So you have come back.
I'd like to explain.
I am the leader of these people. I am the big chief fella. You, big fella chief, your people?
There's no need to talk that way. I told you yesterday. I have no people. There's just me. I speak English.
Unless you're honest with me, you're going to regret it. Now, where's your tribe?
I'm an Earthman. Are you deaf? Can't you tell by the way I talk?
Now, listen, you...
Excuse me, Simeon. I don't believe I have met your friend.
Professor Baker, this savage here claims to be an Earthman.
Oh? You are an Earthman?
That's right. My name is Edward Danton. Only a few months ago, I left Earth on a spaceship.
How was it powered?
By a GM subspatial torque converter.
What do you think, Professor?
It's amazing. Truly amazing. His grasp of colloquial English bespeaks a fairly high level of intelligence, which points up a phenomenon frequently met with in savage societies, namely, an unusually well-developed power of mimicry. Our friend Danter, as his original uncorrupted name must have been, will probably be able to tell us many tribal legends and myths.
Oh, come off it, Professor. I'm an Earthman.
No, no, my poor friend, you are not. Obviously, you have met an Earthman. Some trader, I dare say, stopping for repairs.
We saw signs that a spaceship once landed here, Professor.
Oh, confirmation of my hypothesis.
That was the government ship that dropped me off here.
It is interesting to note how his almost plausible story lapses into myth at various crucial points. He claims this ship was powered by a GM subspatial torque converter. Now, this is a nonsense syllabification, since the only deep space drive is at Michelson. He also claims that the journey from Earth was made in a matter of months, since his untutored mind cannot conceive of a journey lasting for years. If we know that no space drive, even theoretically, can reach here from Earth in less than 30 or 40 years...
Then GM must have been developed after you left Earth. How long have you been gone?
The Hutter ship left Earth 120 years ago. We are mostly fourth and fifth generation.
Now, come on, Danta. Where's your tribe? Why are they hiding?
This is preposterous. What can I do to convince you I'm from Earth?
That's enough. We won't stand for back talk from natives. Where are your people?
There's only me.
Maybe a taste of the black snake whip will loosen his tongue.
Later, Jedekiah. His tribe will come around for handouts. Natives always do.
Then let's put him to work. Danta, you can join that work gang over there unloading supplies.
No, thanks. I'll go back.
Chief said no back talk. Why are you natives always so bone lazy? You'll be paid as soon as we unload the beads and calico. Now get to work.
What could I do? I joined the work gang and unloaded the ship. By late afternoon, we had finished. I sneaked off to sit beside a mountain spring near the ship. In a few minutes, Anita, the pretty girl I had noticed the day before, came and sat beside me.
Hello, Danta.
Anita, do you think I'm a native?
What else can I think? Everyone knows how fast a spaceship can travel.
Times have changed since your people left Earth. By the way, they weren't in space all that time, were they?
No, they originally settled on a planet called Lantu. But there was a native rebellion. We barely managed to escape.
In that case, I can understand why they're so nervous about aboriginals.
Oh, but don't worry, Dada. Things will be better when the council takes over.
Who are they?
A council of elders. They're men of goodwill who detest violence. And if you and your people are really peaceable...
I haven't any people.
Yes, I know. But if you and your people are really peaceable, you're sure to prosper under the rule of the elders.
It was no use. I couldn't even convince her. But as we sat together and talked, I began to forget my problems. I was enchanted by her. I think she liked me, too. After a while, as though it were the most natural thing in the world, she was in my arms, and I was kissing her.
What's going on here?
Oh, Zedekiah.
You. You're a disgrace to your people. Are you out of your mind, girl? You can't mess around with a dirty native and keep your self-respect.
Now, just a minute, you.
Shut up. As for you, you've got to learn something and learn it good. Natives don't fool around with hotter women. I'm going to impress that little lesson on you right here and now.
Zedekiah, don't!
I've had enough from you.
Manta, you struck him.
Well, he tried to hit me first. Get up, Zedekiah. You're not hurt.
Oh, my jaw. Help! Help! The natives are revolting! Help!
Well, that did it. People began to shout and run all over the place. Anita tried to calm them down, but it was no use. I took to the brush just before they turned a machine gun on me. And all that night I hid while armed parties went crashing through the woods, shouting and firing at shadows. It was a nightmare.
There goes one.
Quick, they're behind us. Turn the machine gun.
Got him.
No, they got away. Look, look there in the trees. Fire, man, fire.
It was like that all night long. By morning, I was exhausted, and so were they. I hid in the jungle and waited. I don't know what for. And then, along about the middle of the day, I saw Anita. I thought she was alone at first, and I knew she was looking for me. I stepped out in the trail in front of her.
Oh, it's you, Danton.
Anita, there are men back there.
It's all right. They won't harm you. They came to guard me. Danton, are you all right?
Guard you from me?
They don't know you as I do. At the council meeting today, I told them the truth.
You did?
I told them the fight wasn't your fault. I told them you were only defending yourself. And Zedekiah lied. No pack of natives attacked him. There was only you. And I told them this.
At last. Did they believe you?
Oh, yes. I explained that the native attack came later.
Native attack? Now, look, there wasn't any attack, Anita. There couldn't be. There aren't any natives. I could tell right then it was no use trying to convince anyone, even the girl I loved. It was then that I decided on a desperate plan. I sent Anita back to her people and waited for a time just to make them nervous. And then the next morning, I came striding into the middle of the Hutter camp.
Halt! One step more and I'll kill you.
I want to see Simeon.
All right, Zedekiah, I'll take over. Here I am, Danta.
Shall I shoot him, Simeon?
No, let him speak. Go on, Danta. What is it?
I have come here to bring you a declaration of war.
What?
I'll kill him now.
What is it? What happened? Oh, Danta, what is it?
It's war.
But I begged with you to bring peace to your people.
They wouldn't listen. It's war. All the tribes are gathering from every outlying island.
How many are there?
Many thousands. 50 or 60. We will fight to the death.
Danta, wait. Surely we can reach an agreement. Why shed all this blood?
There is a way.
I thought so. What do you want?
Equal rights.
Yes, yes. What else?
That is all. Except, naturally, an alliance between the ruling clan of the Hutters and the ruling clan of New Tahiti. In short, a marriage.
Never. We'll fight, even though we're wiped out.
We can't. We wouldn't have a chance. Except, Father. Except before it's too late.
How can I accept? Where could I find a Hutter woman who would sacrifice herself for a marriage like that?
Why don't you ask me?
So it came about. Anita and I were married and were very happy. The Hutters, too, prospered in their new land. And soon they began to build up a thriving new civilization. Anita and I and our family moved to one of the more remote islands, where we weren't so much in the thick of things. Sometimes people would come to see us and ask me to talk about my people. And I would tell them how they could not stand the white man's civilization and how they died off, all but me. It always made them feel very guilty. And somehow I liked to watch them squirm. As I said, I've always been a misfit.
X-1 has brought you The Native Problem.
We pause now for station identification.
X-1, untuned to yesterday from the 26th of September, 1957, on NBC. The story was first featured in Galaxy Magazine in December of 1956. The 23-page story by Robert Sheckley was adapted by William Welch for X-1, who flipped the story from the third person to a first person narrative. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of 2000+ with the story The Other Man, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from June 7th, 1950.
This is Security Police Headquarters. We've just seen the photo print and it's impossible. I said impossible. No matter what the evidence proves, no man can be two places at once.
2000+. Science fiction adventures in the world of tomorrow. 2000+ presents The Other Man.
Hey, darling, you home? Hey, when I come home, I want my wife to be here. Mary Ann, here. Hey, didn't you hear me?
Scotty! Oh, my darling. Oh, Scotty. Scotty.
Mary, for heaven's sake, what's the matter?
When did you escape? How did you get away?
Escape? Would you mind telling me?
Shh. Quiet. I thought I heard someone. Just a moment, darling. There now. We can talk. Oh, Scotty, I couldn't understand what had happened to you. I was so worried. I couldn't believe it.
Mira, I hate to stand here like an idiot. I just can't go on repeating your silly phrases after you. What are you talking about?
Then you didn't kill the man in the blue turban?
Where was I supposed to have killed him?
In Cairo.
Cairo? When?
This morning.
Look, darling, I know this is the year 2000 plus 120, but even in this age of super science, there's no jet plane fast enough to fly me from Cairo, Egypt, to Metropolitan City, USA, that fast.
Scotty, I'm telling you the truth. Look, I'll show you. It's all over the front pages of the facsimile newspaper. See? There, the whole story in headlines, and your picture, too. Read it. Read it.
The World Security Police in a daring action in Cairo, Egypt, today captured Scott Douglas, chief of the Eastern Zone Security Police Section, as the chief criminal behind a worldwide black market operation running into millions of dollars annually. In the struggle preceding his arrest, Mr. Douglas shot and killed a mysterious stranger wearing a blue turban.
You see, darling, it is true. Not only in the papers, but all day in the Televox news. I've seen it, Scotty, with my own eyes. Being taken to the police, to the airport, it was you, Scotty.
I tell you, this is not true. It's not me. Look, call my office. Ask for the chief. Ask him what this is all about.
They know you've escaped. They'll come here. They'll capture you
again.
They won't
do any such thing because none of it's true. Look, if you're worried about it, don't tell him I'm here. If he asks you, deny it. But for heaven's sake, call him.
All right, Scotty. All right. Mr. Enright?
Hello, Mira. I was rather expecting you to call. You want to know about Scotty, don't you?
I can't understand it, Mr. Enright. I've seen it in the papers, on the Televox, but I can't believe
it. I'm afraid it's true, Mira.
But are you certain it's Scotty?
There's no doubt of it.
But how do you know?
By the obvious methods. It looks like Scotty. It talks like Scotty. It's wearing Scotty's clothes, carrying Scotty's wallet with your picture and his private papers in it. The small birthmark on the left arm, same blood type, same fillings in the teeth. And the fingerprints are exactly Scotty's. I had everything double-checked by audio from Egypt against Scotty's personal identification file here. And to top it all off, Mira, I talked to him by audiophone just a few minutes before the jet plane took off. I'm sorry.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Enright.
Oh, just one thing more, Mira.
Yes?
Scotty is due to land in about 3 hours. I'll send someone over in a little while to pick you up. I know you'll want to see him.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's unbelievable. It's fantastic. Mira, I...
Who are you? Who are you?
Who am I? I'm your husband. I'm Scott Douglas.
I'm going to call the police.
Oh, stop it. I am Scotty. Look at me, Mira. I am your husband. No one can fool you about that. Look at me. Good Lord, Mira, look, look. Look, here's my wallet. The one he talked about, see? It is mine. You know it. Look. Touch it. Thumb through it. There's your picture. There's the stitching where I had it repaired last October. Remember, Mira? When I didn't want to throw it away for sentimental reasons because we bought it that night last summer at the Little Bazaar? Who would know that, Mira, except your husband? Who would remember that except me? Here, look at this. Pull my sleeve up. The birthmark on my left arm. Nobody could fake that ugly thing. You know that mark, every twist of it. Fingerprints. I'll give you all you want. Have them checked any way you want. I am Scott Douglas. I am your husband.
Then who? Who is the other man? Police, Scotty. They're here to pick me up.
And take you to the airport to meet your husband.
Oh, Scotty, I'm frightened.
You must never let anyone know that. It's the only way I'll ever be able to figure this thing out.
I'll try, darling. Just a moment, I'm coming. Oh, darling.
Now, remember, this whole thing may be a trick. I don't know why or for what reason, but there's always the possibility that this was a deliberate deception.
But they can't fool me.
They did fool you, Mira. You believed all the publicity, all the newspaper reports, everything you saw on the telebox. That's what I can't understand. This whole thing's being carried out so openly, so boldly. They act as if they're so sure of themselves.
I've got to go now. They'll be suspicious.
Yes, yes. Now, remember our plan. Yes. After you leave, I'll get out of here. I don't know where I'll go, but I'll get in touch with you from time to time. You'll always know it's me and not the other man because I'll use the code word bazaar.
I know, darling. You don't have to tell me again.
All right, and act toward this other man as if he really were me. At least do that for a while. It's obviously what they expect of you.
Yes, yes, Scotty. You've told me a dozen times. I know what to do. Goodbye, darling.
Yes, what is it?
Plane from Cairo with Douglas aboard coming in, sir.
Okay. Over here, Mira. We can see the plane land from this window. It'll be landing over there by that ramp.
Who are those men?
Security police. I'm sorry, Mira, but we can't take any chance of Scotty escaping. We've taken great care ever since his arrest. The plane's coming in now. Taxiing.
I wonder what he'll look like.
A little tired, perhaps, but it's Scotty. I told you that. Well, the plane stopped. You'll see him in a moment, Mira. Now, look, when he comes in here, don't break down. He's going to need all the courage and help you can give him.
There, look. It does look like Scotty.
Well, yes?
Prisoner's coming up, sir.
Bring him in the moment he arrives.
Yes, sir.
Do you like a drink, Mira?
No, thanks.
Cigarette?
Nothing, please.
Oh, here they are. All right, men, outside. Leave Douglas with me.
Okay, sir.
Hello, Scotty.
Hello, Chief. Hello, Mira.
Hello?
I think I'll, look, I'll leave you two alone for a while.
Thanks, Chief. I'm glad you're here, Mira. I was wondering if you would be.
Were you?
Mira, what's the matter? You're so cold, so distant. Darling, I don't understand. Don't you want to talk to me, Mira?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's all been a terrible shock to you, hasn't it? When did you learn? Did the chief call you?
No. I first learned through the newspaper, then the telebox.
You mean it's been published, broadcast? Good Lord, everybody knows then.
That's right.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry. I hardly know what happened myself. The last few days are a blur, a blank. All I remember is a room in a hotel in Cairo, a man with a blue turban, the police. I became panic-stricken. There was a fight, a shot, and then the arrest. And the talk about the black market. I don't know what that means. Mary, you look so strange. For heaven's sake, what's the matter?
Don't touch me.
Don't touch you. I'm your husband.
Oh, you're not my husband.
Oh, darling, darling.
I can't pretend. You're not Scotty, you're not.
I'm not Scotty. Amira, stop this hysteria at once. What do you mean I'm not Scotty?
It's a trick. It's a cruel hoax.
I think you're serious.
Call them in. Tell them I know.
Mary, what have they done to you, said to you?
I could ask you those questions. And I could also ask you, who are you?
Who am... This is crazy.
Let me see your birthmark.
What? All right, look. It's me, Dolly. You know that's real.
But I... Let me see the wallet.
You mean this? There it is. Your picture. Even the stitching I had done when I wouldn't throw it away. You remember, darling.
It is the wallet. It looks just like it.
What did you expect?
Well, they could fake it. They have ways. A wallet could be faked.
Look, Mira, I don't understand all this. But I am your husband. I am Scotty. Let me prove it to you. Ask me anything about us. Anything.
Oh, where did we go last summer?
To Paris for 2 weeks. We stayed at the Hotel George V.
What did we do when we first got there?
We opened the window and sang a silly song about Paris. We made it up as we went along, and then... And then I kissed you.
We were alone. No one could have seen.
We went out, had a drink. You ordered champagne in the afternoon. The waiter tried to talk you out of it.
Stop it! Stop it! I don't know how you know these things! You seem to be Scotty, and yes...
Oh, darling, darling.
It can't be. I saw you only a few hours ago and home.
But I was on the plane. You saw that.
You were home! Home!
All right, darling, if you say so. Take it easy, honey. Don't cry. Don't. There, now, if you say Scotty was at home, then that's where I was. Home. Home.
I've got the reports from Cairo, Chief.
Complete?
As complete as they'll ever be. They just came in via high-frequency telebox, and we had photoprints made. Here they are.
Never mind, just give me the highlights.
Well, the man in the blue turban was Mustafa Cornelius. He made his living in art, sold pictures and things.
What was he doing in Scotty's room?
Oh, probably picking up some stuff. You know, the place was filled with pictures.
Yeah, and Scotty said he doesn't know how they got there. He said that even when we showed him Egyptian police reports that he and Mustafa had been followed for 2 days. And on several occasions, Scotty was carrying pictures himself.
So he was lying.
No, he wasn't. We gave him a lie detector test and he came through 100%.
I didn't know that.
But it's true. And why was Scotty in Cairo anyway? He had no orders to go there.
How do you explain that?
He didn't. He said he couldn't remember.
Well, this is one for the books. Sounds like two other guys.
That's not so funny.
What do you mean that's not so funny?
When Scotty got off the plane and came in here, I turned on the intercom and left him and Mira together. I listened to their conversation from the outer office.
Learn anything?
I don't know. Except that Mira seemed to doubt it was Scotty.
Now, wait a minute. It was Scotty.
It was Scotty, and you know it was Scotty. But why wouldn't Scotty's own wife know it was Scotty?
I don't know.
I don't either. Two other guys, huh? Well, we know that the Scotty who got off the plane is safely locked up in this building. You and I are going to see his wife and try to figure this puzzle out. Come on. Hello, Mira.
Mr. Enright.
I want to talk to you. Close the door, Paul.
Right.
You shouldn't have come here.
Why not? I have some questions to ask you.
I'm expecting someone. Please go.
It'll only take a few minutes, Mira. I want to help Scotty, but I can't do it alone.
I'll come to your office.
But the chief wants some answers now, Mrs. Douglas.
Oh, then come in here.
Thanks.
When my visitor comes, I must ask you to stay in here.
Of course. I'm sorry to have disturbed you like this, but there are some very strange things about this matter.
Strange? What do you mean, Strange?
Why didn't you believe that was Scotty in my office?
Then he told you that he isn't Scotty.
He told me nothing. I listened in. And it was Scotty. It's the Scotty I know. Now, why don't you believe that? That's one of the things that puzzles me. One of the strange things.
Where's Scotty now?
That's your doorbell. The person you're expecting.
Where's Scotty
He's
now?
He's at the detention house in a cell. Why aren't you answering the door?
You stay here. Please, stay here until I get back.
Chief, she's as nervous as a radarscope.
Shh, quiet. Put your ear to the door and listen.
Hello, darling.
Hello, Scott.
It's a man.
Can't make out what they're saying.
Something vaguely familiar. Oh, no, it can't be.
What do you mean, Chief?
Take your gun.
All right, now, just don't move. Hello, Chief. Mary was just telling me you were here.
Scotty, I don't know how you did it, but escaping from detention is a very serious...
I didn't escape. I've never been there. I've never been to Cairo. I don't know what's going on, Enright, but I'm glad you're here so this whole mess can be cleared
up. Just don't move, Scotty. Get on the audiophone, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Call headquarters, have them check on Scotty.
Right.
Scotty, you and I have been friends for 10 years. Now, what kind of a game are you playing?
I don't think friends hold a gun.
But what do you want me to do, let you get away again?
Mr. Enright, I told you...
Mira, you're as mixed up as I am. Admit it. You see, Scotty, I overheard the conversation you and Mira had at headquarters.
But I wasn't
Let's
there.
Let's not argue about it. We'll know in a moment.
Hey, Chief.
Yes, what is it?
I talked to headquarters, Chief.
Well?
Scotty is still there in a cell.
What?
Still there?
Now, wait a minute.
That's what they said.
Get them to put Scotty on the phone.
Yes, sir.
We'll get to the bottom of this pretty quickly now. Let's go into the other room. Come on.
Yeah, Chief wants to talk. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all right. Hold the line. Chief wants to talk to you. Here he is.
Keep them covered. Hello?
Yes, Chief.
That you, Scotty?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to be sure.
Chief, what on earth is going on? You don't have to talk to me to be sure. Not when you've got me locked in a cell that dynamite couldn't blow
over. Okay, Scotty.
Scotty? Who are you talking to?
To Scott Douglas, who got off the plane from Cairo this morning.
But I'm Scott Douglas.
Chief, you seen Mira. I want to talk to her again.
Just hang on a moment. Now, just repeat after me. I am Scott Douglas of the World Security Police.
Now, look, you... Oh, all right. I am Scott Douglas of the World Security Police.
Okay, let's hear you say that.
Chief, are you crazy?
Say what I tell you.
I am Scott Douglas of the World Security Police.
Sound exactly alike.
Now what do I do, sing Mother McCree?
What you do is what you've been doing all day. You wait for me in your cell. And you're coming along with me.
What are you going to do?
Mrs. Douglas, I'm going to take you and your husband to meet your husband.
He's out here, Chief.
Bring him in. Mira, Scotty, you stand over there.
All right, Chief. Now, once and for all, tell... Mira. Oh, darling, I'm glad... Good Lord.
Mr. Enright, I can't believe it.
It's absolutely incredible. He looks just like me. What is this, Chief? What is...
Have either of you two ever seen each other before?
Every morning in the mirror. What kind of a gag is
this? Now, be quiet, both of you.
Yes, Chief.
Have you got those reports?
About 2 minutes.
Let me know. Now, one of you two is an imposter. I will say this. The resemblance is fantastic. You, the one we had in the cell. We got your fingerprints, teeth identifications, birthmark, and so on when you were arrested. They all verified that you are the real Scott Douglas.
I've told you that all along. I'm Scott Douglas. Chief, whatever is going on
here... We'll know who
here.
You are in a few minutes. We'll have the results of the fingerprint and identification check we had you take before I brought Scotty up from downstairs. Yes?
I've got the report, Chief.
Well?
Everything checks, sir.
Now, come on, talk sense, will you? What do you mean, everything checks?
Fingerprints, teeth identification, birthmarks, everything checks, sir. They're both Scott Douglas.
All right. Now, remember, don't interrupt me. The only way I can tell you two apart is by the clothes you wear. You're wearing a tropical suit, the one you had on when we picked you up in Cairo.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm going to call you Tropical. And you with the tweed, that's your name, Tweed. Is that clear?
Right, Chief.
The last 2 hours of questioning has revealed that the memory of your lives is exactly the same up to 4 days ago.
Whatever questions you were asked separately, you both answered the same. Intimate questions, family questions, every kind. But as of 4 days ago, the police interrogators report that you, Tropical, you are hazy, almost blank, until the arrest and murder in Cairo.
That's right, sir.
On the other hand, you, Tweed, you have a clear memory except for a few hours 3 days ago. Now, here, let me read it. Pursuant to file 198, I was ordered to visit a Mr. David Eitner, suspected of dealing in black market paintings, at 223 West 18th Street, and to pose as a buyer of rare paintings. Mr. Eitner conducted himself in a reasonable and normal manner and exhibited several paintings, allegedly genuine old masters. During our conversation, I heard a faint oscillating sound in the room and inquired whether it was the air conditioning unit. And then I blacked out. Now, at this point, your two memories separate. You both remember everything up to the moment Scott Douglas blacked out. But after that, Tweed's memory does not pick up until 2 hours has passed. Then he reports, "The next thing I knew, I awoke lying on the floor. I thought I had been slugged, but subsequent examination by police medical authority showed no injury of any sort. The assumption was that I had fainted, but no reason for this possibility was advanced. The paintings, together with Mr. Eitner, were nowhere to be found when I regained consciousness. Subsequent police investigation failed to reveal any trace of Mr. Eitner or his paintings." So, there it is. And you, Tropical, you remember nothing for the next several days until we picked you up in Cairo.
I remember that report very well. I wrote it.
But he couldn't have known about the first part of that report. I went alone, no one else. I was there. That was my report.
Stop it, you two. It's bad enough seeing double without you two talking double and remembering double. 2 hours. 2 hours. What happened in those 2 hours?
Chief, I've got an idea.
What is it?
Probably nothing to it after 3 days, but why don't we visit 223 West 18th Street again? Let's see whether Mr. Eitner possibly left something behind when he fled with the paintings.
This is the place.
Looks pretty empty now.
This is where he had several old paintings hanging on the wall.
This is where I was standing when I blacked out.
That's right, Chief. I walked over there from here and then it happened.
What's that? That sound?
Came from over there, that closet.
Come on. Come out of there. Come out or I'll shoot.
Do not shoot, Sahib. No, do not kill me.
Who are you?
Do not kill me, Sahib.
What are you doing here in this room? Talk. Talk.
Do not kill me, Sahib. I beg
you. If you don't talk, I make no promises.
I have children. I have a wife.
And I've got a gun. Well?
If I talk, you let me live.
Talk.
I come to destroy the instrument.
What instrument?
It is in here, Sahib. The instrument of Mustafa Cornelius.
The man in the blue turban.
I swear to come back and destroy it if he ever died. It is built into this closet behind the secret panel. It make Mustafa and me very rich.
Let's see that instrument. Open the panel.
Looks like a control board. What does it do?
I do not know the words to describe it. Only Mustafa knew because he was very wise and very scientific.
You know how to operate this?
Oh, yes, Sahib. Mustafa showed me what to do, and I work long hours doing that for our both becoming very rich.
Show us what it does. And remember, if any danger results, this man has a gun. You'll be the first to die.
I understand, Sahib. Give me something for the instrument.
What do you mean, give you something?
I tried to explain. Give me something, a picture, perhaps.
There are no pictures here.
Then a ring, perhaps a watch, or a shoe, a dog, anything.
Does this make any sense?
Play along with him, Chief. Here, here's a ring and a watch.
Thank you, Sahib. I place them in here and close this small door. I turn on the instrument.
That's the sound. The sound I heard. He's right, Chief. The sound before I blacked out.
Now, what do you do?
A moment until the bell sound. It is finished. Now, you see. There are now two watches, two rings.
Let me see them. Great dynamos of Niagara. They're exactly alike. Even to the scratches, the dirt marks, everything.
Let me see them. You're right. Identical. Perfect copies.
No, no, Sahib. They are not copies. All are original.
But that can't be. The ones I gave you were the originals. The others are the copies.
That's right.
Just a minute, Chief. Look at this marking. Molecular duplicator. What did you say? Molecular duplicator? That's right. That means that somehow... Well, it's possible theoretically, but it means that the molecules and atoms of the originals are perfectly duplicated. And we know that if somehow the atoms and molecules could be exactly arranged, you'd actually have two originals, where only one existed before.
Yes, yes, Sahib. That is what Mustafa say. Those are the words that I do not know how to use.
All right, now listen to me, you desert rat. Does this machine work on anything other than inanimate objects?
None. I do not understand, Sahib.
Does it work on living things, dogs, birds, human beings?
It has worked on a dog, Sahib. Mustafa, he had a dog he liked so much. He make himself another dog like it with this instrument.
Then it would work on human beings, too.
But the dog, one of them, I do not know which one of them, the dog, he died very horribly, Sahib.
What do you mean, died horribly?
One day, about a month after the first dog become two dog, one day, the dog bark and whine. It is in agony, Sahib. And before my eyes, it... I do not know how to say. It is disappear slowly, as if it fall apart. And in a little while, there is nothing left. Nothing.
Molecular disintegration. On living flesh, the effect of the machine lasts only a limited time. Chief, which one of us? Him or me? Which one of us is Scott Douglas?
Next week, 2000 Plus presents another exciting melodrama from the world of tomorrow. For thrillers that are different, join us again next week and every week. 2000 Plus is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's cast, Ralph Bell portrayed Scotty, Joan Shea was Mira, Nat Poland was the chief, and Gilbert Mack was the Arab. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby. Sound, Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner. Engineer, Ed Formica. This is Ken Marvin speaking.
Plus is a regular presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
2000 Plus on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of June 1950 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lifonier. Thanks for tuning in.